Welcome back to the New World next week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Criminals in action retaliate against human rights. But first, we got to go to science class, and we'll take it from AllGov.com, a really great news source, by the way. The strange growing effectiveness of placebos. It turns out that positive thinking, or just being an American, might have as much healing power as pharmaceuticals. The placebo effect appears to be increasing, making it more difficult for drug manufacturers to determine whether their latest creations are actually doing patients any good. And a new study has shown that the phenomenon is most prevalent in the United States, according to the BBC. Researchers at Canada's McGill University found that just taking part in clinical trials in the U.S. has a healing effect. There's no clear reason why this might be so, although the advertising to consumers of prescription drugs, which isn't allowed in most other countries, might play a part. Researcher Jeffrey Mogul said that the size of the U.S. trials might also be a factor. Basically, people think they're big, fancy things, so they put more faith into them. Some patients also enroll in trials because of a financial benefit. Sometimes you get paid to do it. They may exaggerate their symptoms to gain entrance to the trial. Then as it continues, their symptoms disappear. This might be attributed by researchers to a placebo effect. And sometimes placebos even work when a patient knows they're getting one. A study cited by Mercola.com reported 60% of patients with irritable bowel syndrome who knew they were getting a placebo still reported a relief of symptoms compared to 35 who got no treatment at all. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The FDA requires that all new drugs undergoing clinical trials be tested for a placebo effect. Participants' responses to the placebos are weighed against their responses to the actual drug. The totality of positive responses to the placebos is subtracted from that of the real drug. If the result does not show that the drug has substantially outperformed the placebo, that outcome could prevent the FDA from approving the drug to go to market. So the increasing effectiveness of placebos in treating patients' conditions are consequently making it more difficult for new drugs to pass clinical trials, much to the consternation of Big Pharma, which, again, according to the BBC, often spend over $1 billion to develop their products. So, James, this is really interesting research, and we have the links for it in the show notes. And it's especially interesting because the bottom line is, how can Big Pharma keep making up drugs for everybody, James?
That's right. And it's interesting that this is a problem, or is framed as a problem, by Big Pharma. So people are getting better for nothing, really, for no reason at all. And that's a bad thing, because now we can't sell as much crap to them. Well, that's an interesting take on it. But this is a fascinating story, isn't it? I mean, the entire idea of the placebo effect is one of those little needles that can pop the bubble of a lot of shared assumptions on a lot of things, including the nature of consciousness and the idea of self-directed neuroplasticity and all of these ideas that can really change our idea of what consciousness is and whether it's just a bunch of neural activity happening in the brain or something else is fascinating in and of itself. But think about what this implies. I mean, that advertising can make you actually believe in drugs to the point where you simply get better because you think you are taking a drug is one of the things that they suggested in this article. And I think that's fascinating because it does show that what we believe, what we are inundated with, what our consciousness is flooded with day in and day out, has actual real manifestations in our physical body, let alone whatever else, however else it affects our life. So keep that in mind when you're deciding what to tune into and what to tune out of in your day-to-day life, because it can truly make the difference between you being a healthy and happy and positive individual who actually contributes and creates, or being one of the zombified masses that is usually the reason that Madison Avenue is trying to sell crap to you.
Well, and I think that really kind of speaks to what we've been trying to do on New World Next Week and in both our respective works through especially 2015, but hopefully before that, is again kind of focus on the positive. And that's why we will have good news in the third segment of this episode. James, we've got a related article from LiveScience.com on the leading causes of death in the U.S. and research going from 1969 to 2013. Now, we won't get into all of this, but I think it makes an interesting related that the main causes of death, just as you've noted, we've gotten healthier as years have gone by, but the different most leading causes of death have changed. Now the highest of which are things maybe like suicide and Alzheimer's, and we've fixed things like stroke and cancer and diabetes because we figured out like I did, hey, maybe smoking cigarettes is really stupid and I should quit doing it. And I did now 3.5 years ago. So, James, I think this is a really important area of discussion about, just as you said, kind of modern life and health and even psychology and physiology. So, again, we'll always implore people to go check out the links and go do further research for themselves, especially when it's, you know, fascinating areas like this. However, it gets a little grosser when we move to our second story this week. 2 weeks after it sued the CIA, data is stolen from the University of Washington's Center for Human Rights. So earlier this month, The Stranger, which is a free alt-weekly newspaper out of Seattle, they wrote about a landmark lawsuit filed by the University of Washington Center for Human Rights against the Central Intelligence Agency, and they were seeking info about possible war crimes committed in El Salvador during that country's civil war. So over the weekend, somebody broke into their offices of the center's director. Now, the statement from the University of Washington Center for Human Rights, quote, her desktop computer was stolen, as well as a hard drive containing about 90% of the info relating to our research in El Salvador. While we have backups of this information, what worries us most is not what we have lost, but what someone else may have gained. The files include sensitive details of personal testimonies and pending investigations. This could, of course, be an act of common crime, but we are concerned because it is also possible this was an act of retaliation for our work. There are a few elements that make this an unusual incident. First, no sign of forcible entry. The office was searched, but its contents were treated carefully and the door was locked upon exit, characteristics which do not fit the pattern of opportunistic campus theft. Professor Godoy's office was the only one targeted, although it's located midway down a hallway past other offices, all containing other computers. The hard drive has no real resale value itself, so it seems there was no reason to take it unless the intention was to extract the information. And lastly, the timing of this incident in the wake of the recent publicity regarding their FOIA requests against the CIA regarding suspected perpetrators of grave human rights violations in El Salvador invites doubt as to potential motives. Now, the author of this Stranger article points out this is an agency that assassinates people with drones, tortures prisoners, and has helped to carry out bloody coup d'etats, and whose analysts were accused of hacking and stealing the data of senators who were investigating the agency just last year. So CIA spokesperson Dean Boyd responded to The Stranger saying, quote, your suggestion that CIA had anything to do with this alleged activity is offensive, insulting, and patently false. So we've got the background info on this story about the University of Washington taking the CIA to court. James?
I think at this point, given what we know, there is no doubt that the number one prime suspect in this case would be the CIA, who has a means, motive, and opportunity for crime. But are they ever going to face the music for this? I would be surprised if they did. But I hope people will follow this story back to the original story about this case that this center filed against the CIA, because it is extremely interesting and revealing. And for people like myself, born in the late 1970s, grew up in the 80s, but I had no idea about politics at the time, things like this, the American involvement in El Salvador in the early 1980s, exceptionally important, exceptionally brutal and disgusting story of mass atrocity. And again, we've been so desensitized to it, we tend to say, roll our eyes and say, oh, well, you know, what else is new? But I really hope people will follow this story and take a look at it. And I'll just read a little bit that I think is operative here. On October 5th, the University of Washington filed a landmark lawsuit against the CIA, alleging the agency had been improperly withholding information it possesses about the massacre in El Salvador. The center filed a Freedom of Information Act requests in 2013 seeking information about Ochoa Perez, a former colonel in the Salvadoran military who went on to serve in the country's parliament and who was responsible for ordering the killings. He trained at the Inter-American Defense College in Washington, D.C., surprise, surprise, and is reported to have commanded the military detachment involved in the attacks. And it goes on from there. So, again, direct involvement that the CIA knows and has information about, but they won't release it because of national security. They tried to file it again, and the CIA said, it would be a burdensome search, so we won't do it. This is total BS. So, regardless, again, of whether the CIA is ever going to be called to account for what it very likely did in breaking into this office and stealing the files, still, I think that if this brings renewed attention to this case itself, I think that would be for the good.
So maybe Turnabout is Fair Play. We'll have one funny little related story to this, James, about the teen who hacked into John Brennan, the CIA director's email, and he's given an interview with Wired magazine and tells him how he did it. So having said that, we'll move to our third and final story this week on episode 246 from New World Next Week, and it's a little bit of good news next week. Iceland jails 26 corrupt banksters for 74 years for a combined... Yeah, 74 years. That's a lot. So not 74 guys, but 26 banksters. So in a story not really reported on by mainstream Western sources, Iceland sentenced another 5 high-level bankers to prison for directly contributing to the collapse of the country's economy in 2008. That brings the total to 26 bankers now behind bars in Iceland, with most of them being CEOs of large financial institutions rather than low-level traders. So most of those jailed will serve terms of 2 to 5 years, according to a report by Iceland Magazine, which we have the links to, which is a lengthier article, which notes that 3 executives at Landsbankin and 2 at Kaupthing, along with 1 prominent investor, have been prosecuted. Their crimes include, but of course aren't limited to, market manipulation, embezzlement, breach of fiduciary duties. Their market manipulation destroyed Iceland's economy, and to this day, it's still having to repay global loan sharks at the IMF, as well as other governments in other countries, which, of course, kept the nation going. The article explains from Iceland Magazine that the prosecutions have been possible because rather than protect and reward the very institutions responsible for the collapse and the gangsters that run them, the Icelandic government let them fail and then created a financial supervisory authority to strictly oversee the banks. Iceland's president, Ólafur Ragnar Grímsson, noted, quote, "Why are the banks considered to be the holy churches of the modern economy? We were wise enough not to follow the traditional prevailing orthodoxies of the Western financial world in the last 30 years. We introduced currency controls, we let the banks fail, we provided support for the poor, and we didn't introduce austerity measures like you're seeing all around Europe," end quote from Iceland's president. Not one bankster in the U.S. has ever been charged with a crime relating to the financial collapse of 08 when it became publicly known. There's still virtually no regulation of the banks, and they are pulling a near record $160 billion in annual profits, all from, remember, money created out of thin air. So, James, we first reported on this development just over 3 years ago on this show in August 2012, that even the IMF was kind of admitting that Iceland was right. So this is further proof of that, James.
I think so. And I think it would be too simplistic to say that jailing the banksters is what has made the rebound in the Icelandic economy. I think there's a lot of things going on there. And I don't think we can directly compare the Icelandic economy to the American economy or things of that nature. But something we can directly compare is the response of the message that the Icelandic people have sent to their banksters versus the message that the American people and many other people in many other countries have sent to their banksters. In Iceland, the message is, if you do this kind of stuff, you are going to be personally held responsible and thrown in jail. And whereas in the American banking system, you do this kind of stuff, we're going to parachute money down from heaven on you and make sure that you get everything you need and you're never going to go to jail. I think I know which one fosters a greater sense of rule of law and the sense of people who will actually, perhaps, potentially, actually respect those laws and respect the people that they're supposedly serving with their banking services, their customers, right? Can you even imagine a system in America or Japan or Canada or anywhere else that actually has a system that thinks of their customers as the people they are serving with their services? Of course not, because banks are there to rip you off, and we all know that, and that's precisely because they continue to get away with it. So say whatever else you want about Iceland and what it's doing, but the fact that they've jailed the banksters is a long step towards actually putting putting the banksters in their place in more ways than one.
And I think once they start to charge you for having money here in the States and the banks, once they start to roll that out, which it's already coming, I think we'll really, and that'll be really good news next week, is when we start to see people go, oh, I quit all my banks. They gave me nothing, and I left them, and I'll enjoy watching them crumble. So, James, one great little Food World Order Good News Next Week update, and these are submitted to us on Twitter using hashtag Good News Next Week. Gorilla grafting, public trees spliced to bear edible fruit. A little simple Mendelssohn splicing, and that's, of course, happening in places like San Francisco, where you've got sort of high tech and high kind of food ideals. And some of the other news stories we're watching using hashtag New World Next Week, which all the folks out there submit news stories. That's how we all stay on top of all these things, because we're crowdsourcing it from all around the world and we love doing it. Senate passes controversial cybersecurity bill CISA, that's CISA, 74-21. Hey, but not before they removed four pro-privacy amendments. Pentagon ready to launch. Oh, this is the phrase that makes war hawks, you know, blood get, oh, they get excited. Boots on the ground in Syria and Iraq. Pentagon claiming we're ready to roll. Boots on ground in Syria and Iraq. And I'll leave you with the musical question, why is the IRS spying on Americans' phone calls? And those stories all submitted to us using hashtag New World Next Week. And James, I'll leave you with a couple of deprogramming notes. I'm going to be the first guest on Dan Dick's new live YouTube show this Friday night, October 30th. Dan Dick's, of course, of Press for Truth, launching a new live video show. And we are launching a subscriber drive coming up this Sunday on November 1st. So a lot happening in the Media Monarchy Kingdom.
All right, good to know, and we'll stay tuned for details. People, of course, can go to MediaMonarchy.com for more on what you're up to, and CorbettReport.com for more on what I'm up to. Until next week, thanks for the three stories.
Awesome, buddy. Thank you.